This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.EDU. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. One of the joys of childhood can be, should be, physical activity. Playing ball and swimming are two activities that leap to mind. These are activities that children can do on their own, of course, or as part of a team. But this afternoon, we're going to take a look at organized sports. We'll talk about how to get the most out of organized sports for children. Our guest is sports psychologist Stephen Durant. He's on the faculty at Harvard Medical School and one of the directors of the Massachusetts General Hospital Sport Psychology Program and the Performance and Character Excellence in Sports Institute. Stephen Durant is also one of the authors of Whose Game Is It Anyway? The book is a guide for parents and coaches. It looks at child development and sport and spells out what can be expected of children from age 1 to 21. Listeners, I invite your questions and comments for our guest, sports psychologist Stephen Durant. You can join the discussion with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free. The toll-free number is 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Stephen Durant's co-authors for Whose Game Is It Anyway are Richard Ginsberg and Amy Baltzel. The publisher is Houghton Mifflin. And again, the phone number is 333-9455, 800-222-9455. Stephen Durant, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
You know, adults love their children. Parents love their children. Why then do we sometimes lose sight of what children's sports should be?
Well, I think... Sports are a ubiquitous aspect of our culture. About almost 90% of American kids will play organized sports by the age of 18. And like anything else in our society, sports are affected by the things that affect all of us. I think at times our culture is based on a bottom-line experience. It's based on speed. It's based on I want an outcome. I want my outcome the way I want it, and I want it yesterday. And that kind of pressure on parents and on kids, I think, impacts all of us and doesn't always make for the greatest experience for our kids.
Yeah, and games can pack, they do pack, a lot of emotion, a lot of passion.
No question. One of the things to clarify about this book is all three of us are athletes, continue to be athletes. Amy Baltzel was an Olympic rower on the women's eight in Atlanta. She was one of the substitutes. She was also on a grinder on the first all-women's America's Cup team in yachting. Dr. Ginsberg was a diver and a lacrosse player in college, and I am still an active rugby player that I get to play with my sons. So we believe in competition. Competition brings out your best. But we have to be mindful of the fact that children are not mini adults,
mm-hmm.
and that's one of the overriding points of our book.
Yeah, for the three of you, you continue to be athletes. The three of you have had good experiences then all the way through your coming up.
I think it's been mixed, and I won't speak for my co-authors, although Amy writes about it in the book that sports were everything for her, and she actually had a very painful experience in sports, and that's part of what influenced her to be, in my mind, one of the great sports psychologists in this country at Boston University, where she's a professor. Dr. Ginsberg and I are both clinical psychologists who then actually became interested in sports psychology because I was actually supervising Dr. Ginsberg, and we would talk about how great our sport experience was, how much it meant to us growing up in youth sports, in high school, in college, and how we were concerned that a number of our patients, a number of the kids and the young adults we were seeing, just weren't having the same kind of experience. And then you may recall this, what really pushed us over the edge was there was the tragic fight that ended in a death with the Hockey Fathers up here in the Boston area. And that kind of got our attention to kind of say, whoa, let's, and certainly that was an extreme example, but I think in most of our communities, all of us are impacted sometimes by experiences that are less than satisfactory, where adults kind of lose control, and so we wanted to take a look at that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we hear stories in the news, and we hear stories from friends and neighbors about poor sportsmanship in children's sports. Couple of questions here, related questions. Then, do these fears about poor sportsmanship lead parents to keep their children out of organized sports, or does it lead children to quit sports?
Well, if you, I had mentioned that organized sports for children is probably one of the few things that we as a culture agree on now, with about 8 to 9 out of 10 kids playing by age 18. Mm-hmm. But there's another phenomenon, and that's the dropout rate. And various studies will give you various percentages where kids drop out. The dropout rate is particularly high at 13. But I would make a distinction. Sometimes at 13 or 14, as kids enter adolescence, they'll say, you know what, I've given baseball a good try. I really don't want to play that anymore. I'd rather play the saxophone. Terrific. Yeah. I don't think of that as quitting. I think of that as a natural developmental aspect of growing up and making some of your own choices. However, there are a growing number of kids who completely drop out from physical activity. Different studies will cite statistics that are kind of all over the map, but at least 25%, and some studies will go double that, right?
Mm-hmm.
We know the obesity rate is going through the roof for kids from 6 to 12, as well as adolescents, as well as the diabetes route. So this is a public health concern. I would ask your listeners, or ask you, what do you think the number one reason is that kids give for quitting sports and quitting physical activity? The number one reason is two words, no fun.
No fun.
It was no fun anymore.
Whose game is it anyway?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why we ask a number of questions. We sort of challenge parents and coaches a little bit to ask two clusters of questions. What do you want your child to look like by age 21? And what are the 3 to 5 virtues you hope sports will build in your child? Talent isn't enough. And we're so frequently focused on that bottom line outcomes. Got to make the team, got to make the travel team, got to be the MVP, got to win the trophy, got to get into Harvard, got to get the D1 scholarship. And not only does that outcome-driven focus take the focus away, I think, from character building, which is we would regard as far more important, the irony is, by overly focusing on outcome, eventually you drive down performance. If a kid is overly fixated on, oh, I got to get that base hit, I have to win that race, then that actually detracts from performance. So if you have parents, you know, like we've all fallen into this trap, where as parents, you're yelling at the kid from the sideline, Jimmy, go this way, throw the curveball, Jimmy. That actually distracts the kid and takes them, I think, undermines performance in the long run when parents are doing too much of that, or when kids in their own minds are doing too much of that.
Yeah. One of the things you say in the book is organized sports are a serious form of play. So here we have the message that we need to keep these two things in balance. Where do we start?
Well, there's no question, and it's a kid's job to play. That's how they learn, by immersing themselves and with their friends and using their bodies. I think where we start are three simple steps, and you can actually start anywhere, but it's know your child, know yourself, and know the environment, know the sports program you're dealing with. We can take those in any order that you want, but we can start with mm-hmm. know your child. I'd ask a question. We don't expect 6-year-old kids to babysit. We don't expect 10-year-old kids usually to do advanced trigonometry. But sometimes we lose sight of the fact that, especially I think for overzealous coaches, and I have four kids from 23 to 14, and I'd have to plead guilty that sometimes I've probably been an overzealous coach. Mm-hmm. But you can't take the lessons that you see from the NFL and from ESPN and apply them directly to kids. For example, the part of the brain that helps you accurately track a fly ball, a baseball, as it moves through space so that you can catch the fly ball. At what age do you think that part of the brain is pretty much fully operational?
Fully operational? 7, 8, 9?
Well, the fact of the matter is that dynamic visual acuity mm-hmm. is largely in by age 12, but continues to develop through 16 and maybe even into the 20s now based on the latest mm-hmm. research. So that phenomenon that you see on every Little League diamond for kids under 12 in every community in America, when somebody hits a fly ball and that little outfielder takes three steps directly toward the ball and then the ball goes over his head, part of that is because of wiring.
Yeah.
It's not because the kid's not trying. It's not because the kid's not listening. It's not because, you know, this is a this kid isn't athletic enough. Partly, it's the wiring's not there yet.
Yeah.
So we want to be careful about what we ask our kids to do.
Yeah. So I'm off base with my expectation there.
Well, that's right, and not only you, but I think all of us fall into that trap. And there's a lot of things like that. There's a lot of developmental realities that I think most youth and to some extent high school coaches are not aware of. Now that's a general understanding of what kids can do. But beyond that, you want a more specific understanding about your child. How do they respond to transitions? What kind of temperament do they have?
Mm-hmm.
Do they do better when they're by themselves? Do they do better when others? There's some studies to suggest that kids that have a kind of a high level of fearlessness, that they handle groups well, they handle new situations well, sometimes those kids do better in organized sports. Does that mean that you withhold an organized sport experience because your kid may be more timid? No, not at all. But it just helps to pay attention to what does your kid do well. And for example, for younger kids, you can help with their transition into an organized sport. If they're a 5-year-old and they're going to start, let's say a local neighborhood soccer league, you might get them the soccer ball in their favorite color. You might bring them down to the field before they start the organized practice. You may have older brothers or older sister, older kids in the neighborhood help. There are ways to make the experience less frightening and to allow the kids to have an easier transition, and all that is part of knowing your child.
Yeah. Okay. Now, know thyself.
Physician, heal thyself.
Yeah.
Know yourself. I would suggest that in a crude way, we are all 6-foot bodies with a 4-foot blanket psychologically. we can't and we don't cover everything. And you want to ask yourself as a parent, what did you get from sports? What went well? What values did you acquire from your coaches? Who was influential? What didn't go well? And was there anything that produced sports scar tissue?
Yeah.
There's a terrific book by a physician named, a psychiatrist named Dr. Dan Siegel, and it's called Parenting from the Inside Out. And he has a great phrase that he calls taking the low road. And what he means by that is, it's all of us as parents will get angry at our kids. And, you know, we know that a kid is... I got in a car where there was alcohol. We'll have a righteous indignation and a desire to protect. But what he suggests is sometimes our reactions may be greater than is appropriate for the situation. And he says when that happens, it's likely that you have your own scar tissue that makes you go sort of lickety-split down this low road of anger or over-involvement or too much fear for the situation. And I think that can be applied to parents and their kids' sporting situation. Things like, you know, I would have been a great ball player, but my knee blew out. or, you know, this kid screwed me, this coach screwed me when I was in high school, and now he's going to screw my son, and so I have to protect him. I think there's a lot of unfulfilled wishes out there, and it behooves you to, as a parent, to know what went well, what didn't go so well, because your kid's experience is not the same as your experience, and you can definitely get in the way. I'll go back to something we talked about quite a while ago. The first thing, I think, if we think, go back and ask that question, what are the 3 to 5 virtues you hope sports will build? I know for me and my children, I want them to be fit for life. I want them to enjoy their bodies as a sort of a God-given gift and take good care of their bodies so they'll always be fit. Now, if I'm ranting and raving at them or ranting and raving at their coaches and contributing to a less than happy, satisfying experience, I think the chances are they're not going to associate sports and being fit and taking care of their bodies with being a pleasant experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that would go against one of the values or one of the things I'm hoping that they will embrace.
Yeah. Well, the joy of being active for me is for mental well-being. It puts me in a good space.
No question.
Yeah.
I have a saying, I work out about 5 days a week, and it's definitely my healthy addiction. And it, kind of jumping ahead, but I think there's a couple great points I've learned, partly through the Cancer Center, believe it or not. That's part of my job, is that we provide free consultation for cancer patients to help parents help their kids. And some of the things are applicable for all parents, and one of the things that we talk about is, one of the lessons to teach your kid that's more important than sports, more important than anything else, is to teach your kids, don't suffer alone. And to put it in a sports idiom, you want to teach your kids, who are your go-to people? In sports, we talk about a go-to person. That's the person that can score. That's the leader of the team. But in life, I think you want to talk about, who are your go-to people? Who would you talk to if you're worried, confused, in pain? You want to help your children identify that. But furthermore, I think as your kids get older, you want to help them identify go-to behaviors, behaviors under their control that 9 out of 10 times will help them feel better and help them be able to master their life. Now, truth be told, I don't think there's a ton of those behaviors. I think prayer or meditation is one of those behaviors. I think working out and physical activity is another one of those behaviors that usually all the side effects are good, and it will help you feel a little bit better. I think doing things for others is another way. And for many people, music and art. Now, we know there are a ton of behaviors that will soothe you temporarily, but there are pernicious side effects, and they undermine you, whether that's sexually acting out or drinking or drugs or on some of the stuff online gambling, online pornography. It's interesting because studies show that for teenagers engaged in organized sports, they have an improved level of exercise, improved diet, they eat more fruits and vegetables, less likely to use cigarettes or cannabis or cocaine, less likely to diet to lose weight, less likely to carry a weapon, less likely to think about suicide. For girls, less likely to engage in sexual intercourse at an early age. So we know that if kids stay with physical activity and sports into their teenage years, there are all these benefits. But as we talked about earlier, there's a huge dropout rate.
Mm-hmm.
And with that dropout rate comes not just risk for obesity, not just, you know, sitting on the couch, eating the fast food, playing the video games, but increased drug use, increased alcohol use, increased all of the benefits that are derived from sports, these kids are less likely to participate and enjoy.
Benefits of sports, when you ask someone right off the top of their head, they're going to say character development if they're going to say anything, I think. But that said, what do we need to be present in order for that to happen, that character development to begin to take hold so that we are fit for life, that we know this feels good, we have go-to behaviors?
Well, I think, unfortunately, that a lot of us jump to that conclusion that sports build character. But sports don't build character. People build character.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to any emergency room in any major hospital, you will most likely find that a high percentage of the people in that emergency room have engaged in some kind of risky or difficult behavior that may fit the criteria for character problems. Drinking too much, fighting, sexually acting out. Character is built through people, through relationships, and it's painstaking work. It's the mother or father that stays up late comforting a sick child that demands that the kid do their homework and helps them do that homework. It's all of those small, consistent acts of love and discipline. That's what builds character. And I think you'll see even more and more in the pro ranks, teams realize if they're spending all this money, we better make sure we have a high-character person that's not going to take the steroids, that's not going to slap around his wife, that's going to be selfless, that's going to be a good team player, that's going to do what we ask him to do the extra work so that we can win as a team, that we'll be able to sacrifice. That's why we say, what are the virtues and the values that you want? I can't tell you how often, particularly in this last six-month period, it's been stunning to me, how many athletes who have been successful at the high school level or the college level are burning out and finding some way to self-destruct. Regardless of, it's not clear what happened down in North Carolina in that lacrosse incident, but it certainly would appear that there was some bad behavior going on there, right, at some level. So even when our kids get to college, you don't get an adult brain till you're about 20 or 21. Now, that's at least the first two and a half years of college. And our college athletes still need us to pay close attention to them and make sure they're being raised, coached, taught, parented as whole people, and not as performance machines.
Yeah.
So character is absolutely where it's at. But here's the problem. Unfortunately, I think when you talk character or sportsmanship, frequently parents, coaches, even athletic directors will kind of patronize you and nod their head and say, oh, well, of course, we have our mission statement, and yes, we're all about that here. But I think the swiftness of the current of the cultural tide, which is so much about money. We know that, you know, John Wooden is the greatest coach in college basketball history, and I believe Coach Wooden's first 3 years were losing seasons. Well, he simply wouldn't be tolerated in today's fast-paced, you know, you have to win now culture. Mm-hmm. He'd be gone. This is a terrific coach and a terrific builder of men. And a terrific character person. So we're all up against it, I think. You have to swim against the cultural tide as a parent to do this.
This is The Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, psychologist Stephen Durant. We're talking today about how to get the most out of organized sports for children. Stephen Durant is one of the authors of Whose Game Is It Anyway? My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions, comments, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Let's talk with a listener now in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hi. This is a very interesting topic. I'll tell you a little bit about me. I have not read the book, but I want to. I'm a 70-year-old nurse, and anyway, I've had significant health problems. But as a child, I had great fun. How do we put fun back in? Is it possible to, is my question, in this fast-paced world? And I'll hang up and listen to your answer. Thank you.
Well, I think that's great testimony that at age 70, you remember the fun, and I think there's no question not only can we, but we have to. And if you think about it, kids just, if we just spend the time with our kids, they'll naturally show us what's fun. As a dad, I mean, what was most fun for me is wrestling with my kids on the floor. That kind of playful exuberance where you get the time to bond, you get the time to be affectionate. You know, frequently, dads particularly can be pretty hard markers. You know, as we say here, teachers marking in red pen, you know, worrying about their boys particularly in terms of their toughness. But I think that it applies to girls now in terms of performance as well. I like to remember this study, and it goes way back to 1971, and actually was a study that the Navy did about the best, trying to determine psychological qualities of the best of their best pilots. I think it may have been in conjunction with building the Top Gun school in San Diego. But one of the salient findings were that the best of the best pilots had unusually close relationships with their dad, and it implied that there was an affection to that. And I think that's a really important thing to remember, that you want to be doing things. We talk about in the beginning of the book, particularly 1 through 5, there's a story, and it's actually a story of my own two kids, about taking kids to the pool, and the older sister loves this and loves to do it, but the younger
Brian.
The younger brother's not too keen on it.
Yeah.
And how do you make it fun?
Yeah.
And, you know, wanted to force the kid, come on, we all love to swim, and trying to throw the kid in the pool. And there are ways to make it fun. And if it's fun and it's obvious to the younger kids that it's fun, sooner or later they'll join in. We made a rule in our house, for example, everybody has to learn how to swim and everybody has to learn how to ice skate. And some kids will take to that sooner than others.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a very important thing to remember. It's great having a bigger family because you know, I'm so much better a father now, with the 14-year-old than I was with the oldest guy. And we talk and joke about that because the more kids you have, the more you learn. And the more the older kids help you learn. And sometimes when in our society now where you might only have one or two children, you can get so anxious and so uptight mm-hmm. and not even realize how anxious and uptight you are about making sure that they meet these sort of societal markers. You know, you got to go down because we have to play summer hockey because everyone else is playing summer hockey. And then we have to do this and we have to do that. When you've had some experience, you get to lay back a little bit and say, you know what? We're on target. This will work out. As long as it's fun, as long as we're taking care of the basics, this is going to work out and be okay. But it has to be fun. And look, if you're having fun, the kids that have fun, they become better because they stick with the sport. If you really love playing baseball, you're going to work at it. If you're hating it because your dad's making you go, the first opportunity you get when you get a little bit more freedom, you're going to drop that sport like a bad habit.
Yeah. Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Greenup on line 4. Hi.
Hi. When my son was in high school, he was injured playing football in his gym class, and he had a fractured coccyx, so the doctor said. My son told the coach he no longer wanted to play, and the coach called him a sissy. And that turned my son against football.
Well, I actually had a similar experience with my son who actually broke the same bone as a sophomore. And I can tell you from watching him, it was an extremely painful experience. And as we all know, as a parent, to see your child suffer physical injury, that's extremely painful. But what you mentioned, I think, is even harder to bear. And it's that unfortunate situation where overzealous coaches who think they're toughening up our kids don't listen, aren't always as informed as they should be. Listen, there are terrific coaches in this country, but sometimes, as we mentioned, they're under their own pressure. They're under their own pressure from parents to win at all costs. And sometimes unfortunate incidents like you've described happen. Unfortunately, that happens way too often. There's another kid. I was just talking to a close friend, and he was getting his son to go to a football camp that my son was attending, and he was saying it was so hard to convince him to do this because he had a Pop Warner experience, and all the coaches did was yell at him all the time, and it turned him off of football. I wish we could reach those coaches to let them know that what they do is incredibly important, and they have the power to make lifelong positive memories like our first caller, or lifelong negative memories where you never want to go back to the sport. And isn't that a tragedy, I think, when that occurs?
Thank you for your concern.
Thanks for the call. Other calls, other questions, comments are invited this afternoon, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Our topic this afternoon, children and organized sports. How can you suggest that someone give it another try if they've been turned off?
Well, I think just simply that, and another thought that comes to mind is, I wouldn't be above bribery sometimes. I mean, sometimes as parents, we know we may see that our kid has gone through a developmental change, that perhaps they weren't ready to do something, and now physically and maybe even emotionally, you think they might be ready, but maybe they didn't even have any. Incident that was caused them to be fearful or anxious or upset by it, but they're just being hesitant.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a natural thing. I mean, a natural hesitancy. Just think back of when you're taking your kid to school for the first time, kindergarten and first grade. Sometimes you'll see some aggressive behavior and kids hesitant and worried. And parenting you do need some courage sometimes. You do need some discipline. You do need to tolerate some of your child's anxiety or sadness or tears because you know better. You know, you take them to the doctor to get a shot, and you know they need the shot. You mm-hmm. take them to the dentist. And although this may sound in contradiction to the other things I'm talking about, I think there are times where you use your best judgment to provide some firm scaffolding for your child as they transition. And sometimes that may mean you hold their feet to the fire a little bit. So, for example, usually a rule that we would make in our house is that you have to do something every season. Doesn't have to be sports. Could be music. Could be something else. But if you've made the commitment, then you got to stick with it, unless there's injury, obviously, or some other extenuating circumstances. And kids will naturally, I don't want to go today, you know. And it's one thing, actually, if a kid is frequently giving you somatic complaints, I got a stomach ache, I can't go, then you might want to take a look, particularly if they're younger. I don't think you want to prolong a kid in a miserable experience.
Mm-hmm.
But that would be over weeks. I think at the beginning of a season, at the beginning of something, that you try two or three times, four or five times. You know, if there's four or five practices, three or four practices, I wouldn't necessarily give up if a kid is showing some anxiety or difficulty the first or second time. Again, though, it's hard to make a hard and fast rule on this. It depends on the kid's age. It depends on their temperament. It depends mm-hmm. on your knowledge of your own child. But certainly there are times where kids need to be pushed. Kids don't always want to do their homework.
Yeah.
Kids don't always want to do something that's physical for them, even if it's in their best interest. That can be a pretty complicated area, but I think there are times that kids are going to need a push, and they're going to need you to, as I said, to provide some firm scaffolding.
Yeah. Well, there's one of the anecdotes in the book is about a little boy, Anthony, who is, if I'm recalling correctly, is 8 years old, and he doesn't have any friends at school. He's not real good with hand-eye coordination, so the question for his parents is, how do they get him out of his isolation? How do they find the right sport? And then, you know, a little gentle encouragement.
Right.
I would go ahead and use the word push. No shoving, but...
that's a good line, actually. I'm going to use that. Push, don't shove.
That's right.
Yeah.
A gentle push.
I'll tell you another terrific resource that I think is underutilized in this country, and that I think it would behoove Republican or Democratic national platform to support more, and that's Boys and Girls Clubs. We have a terrific Boys and Girls Club in our neighborhood, and a multi-ethnic, well-run, well-utilized, and a Boys and Girls Club that has not just sports but numerous other activities. Frequently, there's such a broad, it does a better job of almost providing for an extended family. So kids that may be a bit anxious, kids that may be a bit hesitant, are sort of well-nurtured, and they can see other kids that may not be that different from them, and they can find a sport, they can find a niche, or they can find an activity. It might not always be a sport, but I've seen Boys and Girls Clubs do a terrific job of helping kids grow and helping them with this term mastery. There's a group, I think it's out of South California or San Francisco. Jim Thompson runs it, called the Positive Coaching Alliance. And they make a terrific, they're not the only ones, but I like the way they've conceptualized it. And this gets into our other point about know your program. And they talk about a mastery approach versus a scoreboard approach. In the scoreboard approach, all you care about is winning, and that's what gets rewarded, winning. And that's what the emphasis is on. The comparison is to others. If we beat the other team, we're better. And mistakes are not okay because mistakes mess up your potential to win. A mastery approach is different. A mastery approach cares about outcome, but it rewards effort. Yeah, we lost, but you guys did terrific. That's the best you've ever played. Mm. It emphasizes learning. Mm-hmm. Are we getting better? Are we learning how to play better? Are we mastering the skill as an individual and or as a team that's required for this sport? The comparison is to the self. You know, you're improving. Man, you're getting so much better. I'm so proud of you. And mistakes are okay.
Yeah.
Because mistakes are an intricate part of the learning process. So that, and the irony is, again, that even at an elite level, pros, Division I college, good sports psychologists will talk about performance enhancement will focus on a mastery approach, not overemphasizing, I got to score right now, I have to win right now. It's that tends to, as I said earlier, to distract you and take you off your game. But that idea of mastery, let me immerse myself in this moment. What do I need to do in this moment? And how can I give my best effort? I think, a much sounder way to approach all this.
Yeah.
That's what we should be looking for our kids. Being aware of developmentally where they're at and then helping them master their bodies and their sport to the best of their ability. Mm-hmm.
I've got another listener. I've got a couple of listeners waiting to talk with us. Before we take these calls, though, I want to go back to something you said earlier about, you know, there was a time when families were larger and siblings can learn from one another. The older ones can take the younger ones in hand and so on and so forth. And I think that's an important part of Boys and Girls Clubs as well, is that you have an integration of ages and stages and the kids can see one another, you know, doing various activities outside of a classroom setting.
I couldn't agree more. And one of the blessings, the things I'm very grateful for, is having a 9-year split between my oldest son and my youngest son. It's like having it's like he has an extra dad. Just he's more fun, and he learns a ton. We were playing. My family's just involved in rugby and always has been. My wife is a rugby player. My dad was a rugby player. My son is a rugby player. And we were playing touch rugby as a family in this little co-ed league that is run in the summer in Boston. And so the 23-year-old is playing with the 14-year-old and the 16-year-old sister and the 53-year-old mom and dad. And it was terrific.
Yeah, that's
it was
great.
Terrific. And yeah. I think you want to be looking for those kind of experiences. And people get it and can get it in skiing and swimming. There are a number of sports that are more family-oriented that can really help bond a family.
Yeah, that really also puts it into perspective, too, the mastery approach.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's talk with a listener now in Aurora on line 4. Hi.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I I'm a grandmother, and I'm sorry to say that I didn't see my grandchildren play enough sports. My one grandson was playing baseball, but there seemed to be so many problems with the parents and other things happening through the game, like parents, that my son and daughter-in-law decided to take him out of the baseball. It wasn't what they wanted for their son, and I was so disappointed. And I'll tell you who plays the most in sports are my two granddaughters. They play soccer, and I'm just thrilled.
Yeah, I think that's great, and that's one of the great things about the changes in laws in this country to really promote women's sports and promote that equality. Certainly, there are some risks to that. And,
do you think that where are our kids playing baseball? Are they? That's our national pastime.
Well, you know, you'll hear a lot of comments, and at least in my neighborhood, you'll hear some comments. Or in my area, you'll hear comments, kids don't go down the park anymore. You know, you hear the Boston accent. They don't go down the park and play by themselves anymore. And actually, I live in an inner-city neighborhood. Kids do go down the park quite a bit. But one of the things about America is its diversity, and there's a tremendous growth in so many other sports that kids can participate in, like lacrosse, like soccer. And I think at times, baseball has suffered as a result of that, even though it is our national pastime.
You know, and I can understand that, yes. Another thing I wanted to see, one of the best sports books I ever read were The Boys of Summer. Can you suggest any book that might be as good as that book?
Oh, man. I Michael Lupica's book called Travel Team, I think is a recent book, and I found that that's one of the last books I've read that was purely about sports, and I thought that was a terrific book.
Could you give me the name again?
L-U-P.
L-U-T.
L-U-P, as in Peter, I-C-A.
Okay.
It's called Travel Team. I'm sure Mike Lupica will be thrilled I'm promoting his book here.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
For the call. Next, we talk with a listener on a cell phone, line one. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
We were talking earlier about, like kids and sports and how to keep them encouraged. And I just wanted to say, I work with a lot of kids. I work as a nanny, actually. And through my own experiences, what I've discovered in our area, what we do a lot is in spring, and what I would encourage a lot of other parents to do is when the kids start going out to play, I usually go to a few of their first practices, you know, and meet the coach. And not just meet the coach, but kind of stand around and watch a practice or two. And I've kind of discovered that, like, if a coach doesn't want a parent at a practice, that should, like, make you really nervous. And I've seen a few coaches, like, on really competitive teams that I don't want my kids on, by the way, that will, like, yell, like swear words at 12-year-olds about how well they're doing at a practice.
Oh, yeah. I think it happens younger than 12.
Yeah. How can you miss that ball? You know, filled with expletives. I'm just like, oh, my goodness. You know, I'm like, my kid is not going to be on that team. You know, and we'll request a different coach or a different team. You know, and the best coaches and the best teams are the ones where, you know, you kind of watch from the sidelines and the kids are out there and the coaches are, I mean, they're so encouraging. They're like, yeah, you can do it, you know, and they show them how to do it. And then maybe they give them like these little bits of encouragement, like, you know, I know you missed it, but I saw you swing it. You know, you swung the bat better. Your elbow was up, you know, and like these little things that they can bring home and tell me, you know, like, oh yeah, I still struck out at practice today, but the coach said my stance was better.
Well, Your observations are terrific, and I'm really glad you called because it actually reminded me of a couple of things, two different points. Studies will show that, especially for Little League, coaches that use a ratio of accurate praise now to constructive criticism that have a 5-to-1 or even higher, 7-to-1 ratio, the kids will rate their experience higher and will be more likely to stay with the sport. So, exactly what you were saying. a coach that may see a child strike out, but because he's a good coach, will recognize that the kid's balance was good, that he had his eye on the ball, that he swung at good pitches, that his form was good, so that the coach can find three or four or five things to accurately praise, even though the outcome, he didn't get a hit, he struck out, even though that wasn't good, some of the other behaviors were, and were in keeping with ultimately succeeding and mastering the sport. So you really hit on a hugely important point in youth sports, and that is coaches and parents want to be emphasizing the positive and looking for accurate praise. False praise is worse than criticism, I think, in some ways. So we're not looking for false praise. And you have to be a good enough coach. You have to do your homework about your sport to know, was it good to keep your elbow up? Was it good to get your knee above your belt when you were pitching, for example? And that's where good coaching comes in. Not at yelling at the kid, but knowing what they need to do to improve, but also being able to tell them what they're doing that's correct. Now, you raise another terrific point.
And I can only give you about 30 seconds.
One more terrific point, and that is pay attention to the program. Ask other parents. Talk to the coaches beforehand. Find out if they have a mission statement. And what are other parents in the neighborhood say about particular coaches and about particular programs? They will be a great source of information about whether you want to put your kid in that particular program.
Okay. Let's play. Stephen Durant, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Stephen Durant is one of the authors of Whose Game Is It Anyway? A Guide to Helping Your Child Get the Most from Sports, organized by age and stage. The publisher, Houghton Mifflin.